Chapter 4. Was there ever such confounded ill luck? My whole life has been a tissue of ill luck. Although I have labored perhaps harder than any man to make a fortune, something always tumbled it down. In love and in war I was not like others. In my marriages, I had an eye to the main chance, and you see how some unlucky blow would come and throw them over. In the army I was just as prudent, and just as unfortunate. What with judicious betting, and horse swapping, good luck at billiards, and economy, I do believe I put by my pay every year, and that is what few can say who have but an allowance of $100 a year. I'll tell you how it was. I used to be very kind to the young men. I chose their horses for them, and their wine, and showed them how to play billiards, or ecarte, of long mornings, when there was nothing better to do. I didn't cheat. I'd rather die than cheat, but if fellows will play, I wasn't the man to say no. Why should I? There was one young chap in our regiment, of whom I really think I cleared 300 L. a year. His name was Dobble. He was a tailor's son, and wanted to be a gentleman. A poor weak young creature, easy to be made tipsy, easy to be cheated, and easy to be frightened. It was a blessing for him that I found him, for if anybody else had, they would have plucked him of every shilling. Ensign Dobble and I were sworn friends. I rode his horses for him, and chose his champagne, and did everything, in fact, that a superior mind does for an inferior, when the inferior has got the money. We were inseparables, hunting everywhere in couples. We even managed to fall in love with two sisters, as young soldiers will do, you know, for the dogs fall in love with every change of quarters. Well, once, in the year 1793, it was just when the French had chopped poor Louis's head off, Dobble and I, gay young chaps as ever wore sword by side, had cast our eyes upon two young ladies by the name of Brisket, daughters of a butcher in the town where we were quartered. The dear girls fell in love with us, of course. And many a pleasant walk in the country, many a treat to a tea garden, many a smart ribbon and brooch used Dobble and I, for his father allowed him 600 L. And our purses were in common, present to these young ladies. One day, fancy our pleasure at receiving a note couched thus. Dear Captain Stubbs and Dobble, Miss Brisket's presents their compliments, and as it is probable that our papa will be till 12 at the corporation dinner, we request the pleasure of their company to tea. Didn't we go? Punctually at 6 we were in the little back parlor. We quaffed more bohea, and made more love, than half a dozen ordinary men could. At 9, a little punch bowl succeeded to the little teapot, and, bless the girls, a nice fresh steak was frizzling on the gridiron for our supper. Butchers were butchers then, and their parlor was their kitchen too. At least old Brisket's was one door leading into the shop, and one into the yard, on the other side of which was the slaughterhouse. Fancy, then, our horror when, just at this critical time, we heard the shop door open, a heavy staggering step on the flags, and a loud husky voice from the shop, shouting, "Hallo, Susan! Hallo, Betsy! Show a light!" Dobble turned as white as a sheet, the two girls each as red as a lobster. I alone preserved my presence of mind. "He back door, says I, he dogs in the court, say they. He's not so bad as the man," said one. "Top!" cried Susan, flinging open the door, and rushing to the fire. "Ache this and perhaps it will quiet him." What do you think his was? I'm blessed if it was not the steak. She pushed us out, patted and hushed the dog, and was in again in a minute. The moon was shining on the court, and on the slaughterhouse, where there hung the white ghastly looking carcasses of a couple of sheep. A great gutter ran down the court, a gutter of blood. The dog was devouring his beefsteak, our beefsteak, in silence, and we could see through the little window the girls hustling about to pack up the supper things, and presently the shop door being opened, old Brisket entering, staggering, angry, and drunk. What's more, we could see, perched on a high stool, and nodding politely, as if to salute old Brisket, the feather of Dobble's cocked hat. When Dobble saw it, he turned white and deadly sick, and the poor fellow, in an agony of fright, sunk shivering down upon one of the butcher's cutting blocks, which was in the yard. We saw old Brisket look steadily as he could, at the confounded, impudent, pert, waggling feather, and then an idea began to dawn upon his mind, that there was a head to the hat, and then he slowly rose up. He was a man of 6 feet, and 15 stone. He rose up, put on his apron and sleeves, and took down his cleaver. "Betsy," says he, "open the yard door." But the poor girls screamed, and flung on their knees, and begged, and wept, and did their very best to prevent him. "Pen the yard door," says he, with a thundering loud voice, and the great bulldog, hearing it, started up and uttered a yell which sent me flying to the other end of the court. Dobble couldn't move. He was sitting on the block, blubbering like a baby. The door opened, and out Mr. Brisket came. "To him, Jowler," says he. "Eep him, Jowler." And the horrid dog flew at me, and I flew back into the corner, and drew my sword, determining to sell my life dearly. "That's it," says Brisket. "Eep him there, good dog, good dog. And now, sir," says he, turning round to Dobble, "is this your hat?" "Yes," says Dobble, fit to choke with fright. "Well then," says Brisket, "it's my painful duty to pick, to tell you, that as I've got your hat, I must have your head. It's painful, but it must be done. You'd better, settle yourself calm favorably against that, that block, and I'll chop it off before you can say Jack, no, I mean Jack Robinson." Dobble went down on his knees and shrieked out, "I'm an only son, Mr. Brisket. I'll marry her, sir. I will, upon my honor, sir. Consider my mother, sir. Consider my mother." "That's it, sir," says Brisket. "That's a good boy. Just put your head down quietly, and I'll have it off, yes, off as if you were Louis the sixteenth. I'll chop the other chap afterwards." When I heard this, I made a sudden bound back, and gave such a cry as any man might who was in such a way. The ferocious Jowler, thinking I was going to escape, flew at my throat. Screaming furious, I flung out my arms in a kind of desperation, and, to my wonder, down fell the dog, dead, and run through the body. At this moment a posse of people rushed in upon old Brisket. One of his daughters had the sense to summon them, and Dobble's head was saved. And when they saw the dog lying dead at my feet, my ghastly look, my bloody sword, they gave me no small credit for my bravery. "Terrible fellow that Stubbs," said they, and so the mess said, the next day. I didn't tell them that the dog had committed suicide. Why should I? And I didn't say a word about Dobble's cowardice. I said he was a brave fellow, and fought like a tiger, and this prevented him from telling tales. I had the dogskin made into a pair of pistol holsters, and looked so fierce, and got such a name for courage in our regiment, that when we had to meet the regulars, Bob Stubbs was always the man put forward, to support the honor of the corps. The women, you know, adore courage. And such was my reputation at this time, that I might have had my pick out of half a dozen, with 3, 4, or 5,000 pounds apiece, who were dying for love of me, and my red coat. But I wasn't such a fool. I had been twice on the point of marriage, and twice disappointed. And I vowed by all the saints to have a wife, and a rich one. Depend upon this, as an infallible maxim, to guide you through life. It's as easy to get a rich wife as a poor one. The same bait that will hook a fly will hook a salmon. July. Summary proceedings. Dobble's reputation for courage was not increased by the butcher's dog adventure, but mine stood very high. Little Stubbs was voted the boldest chap of all the bold North Bungays. And though I must confess, what was proved by subsequent circumstances, that nature has not endowed me with a large, or even, I may say, an average share of bravery, yet a man is very willing to flatter himself to the contrary. And, after a little time, I got to believe, that my killing the dog was an action of undaunted courage, and that I was as gallant as any of the 100,000 heroes of our army. I always had a military taste. It's only the brutal part of the profession, the horrid fighting and blood, that I don't like. I suppose the regiment was not very brave itself, being only militia, but certain it was that Stubbs was considered a most terrible fellow, and I swore so much, and looked so fierce, that he would have fancied I had made half a hundred campaigns. I was second in several duels, the umpire in all disputes, and such a crack shot myself, that fellows were shy of insulting me. As for Dobble, I took him under my protection, and he became so attached to me, that we ate, drank, and rode together every day. His father didn't care for money, so long as his son was in good company, and what so good as that of the celebrated Stubbs? Hago. I was good company in those days, and a brave fellow too, as I should have remained, but for what I shall tell the public immediately. It happened, in the fatal year 96, that the brave North Bungays were quartered at Portsmouth, a maritime place, which I need not describe, and which I wish I had never seen. I might have been a general now, or, at least, a rich man. The redcoats carried everything before them in those days, and I, such a crack character as I was in my regiment, was very well received by the townspeople. Many dinners I had, many tea parties, many lovely young ladies did I lead down the pleasant country dances. Well, although I had had the two former rebuffs in love which I have described, my heart was still young, and the fact was, knowing that a girl with a fortune was my only chance, I made love here as furiously as ever. I shan't describe the lovely creatures on whom I fixed whilst at Portsmouth. I tried more than several, and it is a singular fact, which I never have been able to account for, that, successful as I was with ladies of mature age, by the young ones I was refused regular. But ain't heart never won fair lady, and so I went on, and on, until I had got a Miss Clopper, a tolerable rich navy contractor's daughter, into such a way, that I really don't think she could have refused me. Her brother, Captain Clopper, was in a line regiment, and helped me as much as ever he could. He swore I was such a brave fellow. As I had received a number of attentions from Clopper, I determined to invite him to dinner, which I could do without any sacrifice of my principle upon this point. For the fact is, Dobble lived at an inn, and as he sent all his bills to his father, I made no scruple to use his table. We dined in the coffee room, Dobble bringing his friend, and so we made a party carry, as the French say. Some naval officers were occupied in a similar way at a table next to ours. Well, I didn't spare the bottle, either for myself or for my friends, and we grew very talkative, and very affectionate as the drinking went on. Each man told stories of his gallantry in the field, or amongst the ladies, as officers will, after dinner. Clopper confided to the company his wish that I should marry his sister, and vowed that he thought me the best fellow in Christendom. Ensign Dobble assented to this. "But let Miss Clopper beware," says he, "for Stubbs is a sad fellow. He has had I don't know how many liaisons already, and he has been engaged to I don't know how many women." "Indeed," says Clopper. "Ohm, Stubbs, tell us your adventures." "Sah," said I, modestly, "there is nothing, indeed, to tell. I have been in love, my dear boy, who has not? And I have been jilted, who has not?" Clopper swore he would blow his sister's brains out, if ever she served me so. "Tell him about Miss Cruddy," said Dobble. He. "Stubbs served that woman out, anyhow. She didn't jilt him. I'll be sworn." "Really, Dobble, you are too bad, and should not mention names. The fact is, the girl was desperately in love with me, and had money £60,000, upon my reputation. Well, everything was arranged, when who should come down from London but a relation." "Well, and did he prevent the match?"
"Prevent it, yes, sir, I believe you he did, though not in the sense that you mean.
he would have given his Isaiah and 10,000 pounds more if I would have accepted the girl, but I would not. Why, in the name of goodness? Sir, her uncle was a shoemaker. I never would debase myself by marrying into such a family. Of course not, said Dobble. He couldn't, you know. Well, now tell him about the other girl, Mary Waters, you know. Hush, Dobble, hush. Don't you see one of those naval officers has turned round and heard you? My dear Clopper, it was a mere childish bagatelle. Well, but let's have it, said Clopper, let's have it. I won't tell my sister, you know. And he put his hand to his nose and looked monstrous wise. Nothing of that sort, Clopper, no, no, pon honor, little Bob Stubbs is no libertine. And the story is very simple. You see that my father has a small place, merely a few hundred acres, at Slotham Squiggle. Isn't it a funny name? Hang it, there's the naval gentleman staring again. I looked terribly fierce as I returned this officer's stare, and continued in a loud, careless voice. Well, at the Slotham Squiggle there lived a girl, a Miss Waters, the niece of some blackguard apothecary in the neighborhood. But my mother took a fancy to the girl, and had her up to the park and petted her. We were both young and the girl fell in love with me, that's the fact. I was obliged to repel some rather warm advances that she made me. And here, upon my honor as a gentleman, you have all the story about which that silly Dobble makes such a noise. Just as I finished this sentence, I found myself suddenly taken by the nose, and a voice shouting out, Mr. Stubbs, you are a liar and a scoundrel. Take this, sir, and this, for daring to meddle with the name of an innocent lady. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.